WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. 7 months after a Loudoun County teen and student at Virginia Commonwealth University died of alcohol poisoning, 11 of his classmates are facing charges in connection with his death. 11 were arrested on charges of unlawful hazing of 19-year-old Adam Oakes. 4 are also charged with giving alcohol to a minor. Richmond police say 3 others who were indicted are expected to surrender in the coming days. We now know what's making students at Georgetown University sick. 2 tested positive for norovirus, according to the university's chief public health officer. In the last week, more than 90 students reported gastrointestinal illnesses. Tests for other students haven't come back yet, but the university says their symptoms are consistent with norovirus. Today, the university is deep cleaning and sanitizing rooms of 6 students and disinfecting other buildings. If you're over 65, immunocompromised, or a frontline worker, you may soon be able to get a COVID-19 booster after a decision by the CDC and FDA.
The booster referenced right now is the Pfizer booster, and it is to be administered 6 months after the second shot. This does not apply to the Johnson & Johnson or Moderna shots. U.S. regulators are expected to decide on those at a later date. You are not supposed to mix vaccines. If you got the Moderna shot, you're not supposed to get the Pfizer booster.
Fox's Mike Tobin. The Marine Corps Marathon will not be run in person this year because of COVID-19. The director of the organization, Rick Nealis, says the marathon usually pumps $30 million into the local economy.
A race of this magnitude is a shot in the arm for the economic impact. And it's sad that, you know, we'll lose some of that stimulus for the community. But we'll be back in 2022.
If you've signed up, you can run virtually, get a full refund, or defer your entry to next year. A pop-up car rally in Ocean City that's gotten out of control in the past is happening again this weekend. Someone there was hit by a car at the H201 car rally in 2019. Last year, a police officer was assaulted. Ocean City spokesperson Jessica Waters says the rally doesn't only lead to problems there.
Last year, actually, participants on the Bay Bridge doing reckless activity on the Bay Bridge. And so we wanted to extend, this is really a problem that extends outside of Ocean City into not only other towns in Maryland, but even other states as well.
She says they warned officials in Delaware, Pennsylvania, and Virginia that drivers could be taking major roads in their areas to get to OC. A heads up, if you're traveling in Tysons this weekend, VDOT crews will be working on bridge joints over the Dulles Toll Road. Work will take place during the late and overnight hours. 2 lanes of I-495 South will be closed, along with 3 bridges at Route 267. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Reds 8-7 in 11 innings. That series continues tonight at 7:10. The Washington football team plays Buffalo tomorrow. Airtime here on WMAL is at noon. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, I'm checking out the traffic cameras, and I have good news. The inner loop and outer loop, you're at speed. Nothing in the roadway to slow you down. On 66 in Fairfax County, there is construction in Manassas, both directions, eastbound and westbound, after the Prince William Parkway and before Route 29. In D.C., on 295, the Anacostia Freeway southbound, there is a crash right after Laboratory Road. And there are no delays on 395 and 695 in the district. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Hour 2 of the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Ballard. John Gizzi is with us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Always a pleasure, John.
Always a pleasure, Rick. And after this week, it's a pleasure to settle down with you.
You were there for the fireworks show yesterday at the White House with White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki and the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. How is the mood in the room about the picture that has been seen and heard around the world now?
Well, Rudy Giuliani gets mocked a lot when he said sometimes the truth isn't the truth. But that seemed to be the case with the reaction that Secretary Mayorkas expressed over the pictures seen around the world. That is, horseback riding border patrolmen wielding whips as Haitian refugees are beneath them in Del Rio. Essentially, Secretary Mayorkas said he was appalled at the picture. Jen Psaki said all Americans would be appalled at the sight of that. But then when pressed, he admitted there was no evidence yet that the Border Patrolmen were in fact whipping the people trying to come into the United States. I might add that Secretary Mayorkas said that horse-riding Border Patrolmen would no longer be used on the border because of that picture, and an investigation was underway. Now, while all this is going on, it should be pointed out that no one, not even the person who took the picture that everyone has seen, has said that they ever saw one of the Border Patrolmen physically whip someone trying to enter the United States, that is, the Haitians. In addition, those who were involved in the training of the horse-riding patrolmen and the use of these split-end ropes that are being called whips say that this is a common practice, getting the horse to move and getting the horse to move to the rear. I might add that Randy Pollard, who has trained horse riding for the Border Patrol for more than 17 years, flatly called the charges of whipping the Haitians BS, and I quote. Others who've served in the Border Patrol say this has never been done and would never be countenanced. Nonetheless, we know that there are no Border Patrolmen on horseback who are going to be in Del Rio anymore, and an investigation is underway. And despite the statements that he made, Secretary Mayorkas said he would follow the recommendations of this investigation and then take action if need be. My reaction, Giuliani said it best, sometimes the truth isn't true.
Are these really whips or are they reins?
No, and thank you very much for clarifying that. You see, when one covers Mayorkas and Jen Psaki, one begins to talk like them. These are reins. These are cut reins that are normally used for getting horses to go forward or sometimes to go backwards. They've been in use by the Border Patrol for decades, and one has to be trained to use the reins if one is going to ride a horse and wear the emblem of the Border Patrol.
Secretary Mayorkas testified before House and Senate committees this week, separate days. Each day asked the question, how many migrants were released into the U.S.? He had to get back to us on that one. Did he get back to us yet, John?
Still waiting on that one. We do not have any hard numbers from Haiti or from the border at this point. What we know now is that anyone who's in the country illegally will be sent back. Now, that's the official line from Secretary Mayorkas, but just how many are here? Who is crossing an increasingly porous border, and who are being turned back and who aren't, is all a mystery at this point. A prediction. One will see my colleagues press this matter further when Jen Psaki begins briefing again on Monday.
You mentioned your colleagues pressing further, and that was my next question. Have you noticed a change in the questions that are asked, the persistence with which those questions are asked by your colleagues in the White House press corps?
Absolutely. We've gone from slow pitch softball to the major leagues in a matter of weeks. And it's hard to believe on what issue this began. Was it Afghanistan, or was it the increasingly volatile situation at the border, or has it just been with the Biden administration ending a honeymoon with the press? Either way, one finds that colleagues who were deferential to Jen Psaki and to other administration guests are now in hot pursuit. One obvious case is my friend and colleague, Steve Portnoy from CBS Radio. He was normally the insider, a very active member of our White House Correspondents Association, but now he often seems in hot pursuit with several questions for Jen just about every day. I think the more I think about it, the more I have to say that the quick fall of Afghanistan and the death of 13 Americans is what got many of my colleagues to stop, think, and listen about just what they're hearing from the world's most famous podium. I think this will be quite evident in the days ahead.
Let us turn to the state of Virginia gubernatorial race. The election's in November, but it has been hot and heavy for the late part of the summer and now into early fall. What is the very latest in how that race is shaping up for Glenn Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe?
Just 2 days ago, for the first time, Republican and first-time candidate Glenn Youngkin took the lead in a race that was long thought Terry McAuliffe's to lose. The Democratic nominee and former governor trailed the fledgling Republican Youngkin by 48-43%. But what makes this even more incredible is to look at the Mary Washington numbers on the races for lieutenant governor and state attorney general. Winsome Sears, a Donald Trump Republican and Marine Corps veteran, has now taken the lead over Democrat Hala Ayala by a margin of 47-41%. If Ms. Sears emerges triumphant, she would be the first lieutenant governor of the Old Dominion who happened to be Republican and black. In addition, Jason Mayaris, the son of Cuban refugees and a member of the State House of Delegates, actually leads incumbent Democrat Mark Herring for the office of State Attorney General by 46-42%. Now, because of Virginia's proximity to the nation's capital, national issues sometimes have a trickle-down effect on the race for governor that always follows the presidential year. With Afghanistan, with the price tag on the infrastructure bill, and the specter of higher taxes, Terry McAuliffe has been forced to play defense of late. Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform may have said it best about national issues helping the candidates in Virginia. According to Norquist, whenever McAuliffe shouts Trump, I would simply tell Youngkin to shout back taxes.
John, you always keep an eye on the elections overseas that could impact the U.S. Elections in Germany on Sunday. What is the anticipation there?
For the first time in 16 years, the retirement of Germany's Iron Chancellor, Angela Merkel, spells a recapture of power by the Social Democrats. Finance Minister Otto Scholz, who's been the partner of the Merkel government in a grand coalition, is leading in all polls and on a very fast track to succeed Merkel as chancellor. Scholz, however, is not likely to win a majority in the Bundestag or parliament and will need partners. It is here that the moderate, low-key finance minister may have to make deals on his left side, specifically with the pro-environmentalist Green Party and very possibly with Der Linke, that is the left. This is a group made up largely of ex-communists from the former East Germany who would like to see, among other things, Germany withdraw from the NATO alliance. That's not likely, but it's no telling what the far left will do in Germany if they get their nose in the door. It'll be interesting to watch the farewell to the woman that Germans all call Mutti, Mama, Angela Merkel.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, and you can follow him daily on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you, Rick. And on today, September 25th, I have a special reason for being happy. 34 years ago today, a young lady by the name of Anne House Quinn introduced me to her sister, who, after 13 years and four proposals of marriage, is now my wife, Colleen House Gizzi. It all started 34 years ago with her sister, and I thank her for the best years of my life.
John Gizzi, the consummate gentleman and a scholar. It is 7:20. It's the Saturday morning update. Al BD is in the WMAL traffic center this morning.
In Virginia, currently on the Beltway, in a loop and out a loop. I'm looking at the traffic cameras, and I'm not seeing any kind of crashes, and I have no reports of any construction. On 66 in Fairfax County, right now all lanes are clear, no construction, eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, southbound traffic is slow because of a crash. Right lane is blocked after the Prince William Parkway. And on the Maryland side of the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you're not going to hit the brakes on the inner loop or on the outer loop. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 54 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:21 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for joining us. Winter is in the air just around the corner, and typically we just go and turn the heat on and call it a day. But there could be some issues that could cause you problems during the winter with your heating and plumbing. And what happens in particular for senior citizens? Well, we're joined now by Jerry Taylor. He is the chairman of the Service Bureau at the Mechanical Contractors Association of Metropolitan Washington. They sponsor a great program. It's called Heat's On, Water's Off. You may have heard about it during the week here on WMAL. Jerry, thanks for being with us.
Rick, thanks for having me. Look forward to talking about the program with you.
Well, now, this is a program that's been going on for, what, over two decades, and we'll talk about that and also get into some tips for everybody that's a homeowner. Tell us a little bit about the program.
So for 21 years, there's been a partnership between the Mechanical Contractors Association of Metro Washington, Steamfitters Local 602, Plumbers and Gas Fitters Local 5, the Prince George's County Department of the Aging, as well as the Prince George's County Fire Department. And the program is designed, as you've alluded to help, to give back to our community, those in need who are a little less fortunate. And we just want to make sure that everybody gets through the winter with heat and drinking water and the ability to take a hot shower and do it safely. There's lots of things that can go wrong with appliances. And again, we seem to take for granted that, you know, we switch from heat to cool and turn the water on and turn the water off and everything works out. But that's not always the case.
Now, you've got a whole team of union HVAC technicians, plumbers, apprentices. How many people do you have going out into the community when you do the program?
We've done this successfully 21 years. The pandemic kind of was a speed bump that we've had to go over and come up with some public service announcements. But based on the number of homes that are brought before us, from the folks with the Prince George's County Department of the Aging, we'll assemble a team of, you know, a plumber and a service technician and possibly an apprentice to go out and hit these houses. Some years we've had upwards over 150 volunteers to go out into the community where we live, where we work, and spend a day making sure that the folks are safe.
Now, for anybody with a home this time of the year, there's more to it than turning off the air conditioning and turning on the heat. What are some of the considerations that homeowners should be thinking about?
Well, some of the very basic stuff that everyone should consider is, have you changed the filter? You know, have you had any maintenance done? If you have a heat pump, you know, the outdoor unit doesn't just provide the air conditioning. That is also your source of heat. Make sure that there's no leaves inside the condensing unit, that the coils are somewhat clean, and you can simply turn the power off and hose down the condenser coil to make sure that it's clean and you're going to get your best heat transfer. On the indoor, this becomes a little more technical. You know, we go in and look for holes in the heat exchangers. You know, we certainly don't want anyone suffering from carbon monoxide. We inspect the flue pipe to make sure that it's not rusted, that it's sealed. You know, if you have electric heat, we're going to go in there and check connections. The basic things that the homeowner really needs to look at is physical appearance. You know, if it doesn't look right, it's probably not right. One of the other things that we do with our group of plumbers is ensure that the toilets aren't running, that faucets don't leak, that hoses have been disconnected from those outdoor hose bibs so we don't freeze and bust a pipe. And we're really looking for those things that could be catastrophic if left untouched, and we try to prevent some of those damages from occurring.
You mentioned carbon monoxide, and there's been a huge focus in the media for years on smoke detectors and changing your batteries a certain time of the year on the smoke detector. Tell us more about the carbon monoxide detectors.
So with this program, you know, it's not just about the labor. It's not just the service technicians and the plumbers and the apprentices. You know, we also have some member partners that are suppliers. So we get donations of smoke detector, carbon monoxide sensors. The Prince George's County Fire Department will come out and test what's there. But our technicians and plumbers will actually replace outdated smoke detectors that will provide that combination smoke and carbon monoxide sensing. So it's odorless, it's colorless, you don't even know it's there unless you have this detector. And more people suffer, sometimes ultimately lose their lives due to carbon monoxide poisoning. And if you don't have a carbon monoxide sensor, you really need one. This isn't just for the appliances such as a furnace or a gas-fueled water heater, but, you know, a car idling in the garage, you know, these things cause real damage real quick. And, again, we hope to be able to mitigate that by installing some newer, up-to-date sensors.
So for a homeowner that may not have had an inspection done for a couple of years, how do you find the right contractor? How do you go about that?
Great question. You know, obviously you could go right to the yellow pages and come up with a million different names, but the things that you need to make certain of is that not only the contractor is a licensed contractor, but that they employ licensed technicians. You know, to do what we do day in and day out, there's a lot of education, a lot of training that's involved, and finding that reputable, established contractor that follows the rules and will be able to come back and help you in a time of need is of the utmost importance.
So for a senior citizen that's in need in Prince George's County, how would they reach you?
So I can leave you both a phone number and an email address, 301-731-0330 is the number to the Mechanical Contractors Association. Or you can email info@mcamw.org. The Prince George's County Department of the Aging is also a great resource. Some wonderful people that work there that exist to help the residents of PG County.
It's the Heats On, Waters Off program of the Mechanical Contractors Association of Metropolitan Washington. And, Jerry, we really appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you, Rick. It was a great conversation.
It's 728 Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland are on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Deep cleaning and sanitizing underway at Georgetown University today after two students tested positive for norovirus. More than 90 students reported symptoms of the gastrointestinal illness in the last week, and many are suspected to also have it. Test results haven't come back yet. Dorms and common areas are being cleaned today. No luck yet for police in the search for Brian Laundrie, a person of interest in connection with the death of his fiancée, Gabby Petito.
Northport police swarm the swamps of the Carlton Reserve, intending to cover every one of the 25,000 gator and snake-infested acres. Tracking him is difficult, given Brian Laundrie's attorney told Fox that Laundrie's parents said he did not take his cell phone or wallet when he left Tuesday, September 14th. The attorney said they were worried he might hurt himself.
A vigil for Petito was held last night in her hometown on Long Island. Her body was found after a cross-country road trip with Laundrie. Concern in Ocean City this weekend is a pop-up car rally that's led to violence returns. In the past, there's been speeding and reckless driving at the H2OI rally that led to someone being hit by a car in 2019. Last year, a police officer was assaulted. Ocean City spokesperson Jessica Waters.
We will have our special event zone in place, which not only lowers the speed limits on Coastal Highway, but it also increases fines for any kind of violations.
WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Reds. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 95 southbound in Woodbridge, you're going to find a crash. Right lane is blocked after the Prince William Parkway. In Fairfax County on 66, no construction and no crashes eastbound or westbound. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, Inner Loop and Outer Loop are at the posted speed limit. On the Maryland side of the Beltway, same thing. Prince George's County through Montgomery County, you're not going to hit the brakes on the Inner Loop or on the Outer Loop. And if you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, all lanes are at the posted speed limit northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A weak cold front will make its way into the region later on today and this evening. Ahead of it, mostly sunny skies this morning, but we will see the clouds on the increase midday and into the afternoon. Dry conditions expected today and comfortable conditions as well, highs in the mid to upper 70s. Later on tonight, mostly clear, lows back in the 50s throughout the region. For your Sunday, plenty of sunshine, high temperatures a little bit cooler in the lower 70s, and will be breezy at times with winds out of the northwest around 10 to 15 miles per hour. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:38 Saturday morning updates, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us, the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Great to have you. And last week we talked about an indictment by John Durham, the special counsel appointed by the Justice Department, probing the Russia investigation. And we talked about the charges against a prominent Democratic lawyer charged with making a false statement to the FBI by not disclosing that he was working for multiple clients, including the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. According to the indictment, during a meeting with the FBI, Sussman lied about the capacity in which he was providing allegations to the FBI, and those allegations were suspicions relating to alleged secret communications between the Trump campaign and Russia. According to NBC News, these suspicions were later determined to be unfounded. There is a story at justthenews.com this week that's kind of in the same neighborhood, and you found that quite interesting.
So, yeah, because of the links and content of what was going on within those connections, one of the guys that's come up in being directly suspected of being involved is a guy named Jake Sullivan. Jake is the National Advisor to President Biden. And if you look back on it, it was a very comprehensive, multi-tiered, news outlet effort to essentially establish a narrative which is provably false, the Russia collusion hoax. And they did it via this combination of lawyers not disclosing who they are, campaign members not disclosing who they are, and trying to get that into the official FBI system. And I think that's where we're seeing the John Durham investigation go at this point, is the entry points to that information and how that was used. So at this point, it's very clear regarding the current reporting that Jake Sullivan seems to be kind of important, to the whole coordination effort. This was not accidental. It was not something that just grew out of a small group of people talking. This was what we would call an information operation, which was designed to have the effect that it did. It tried to undermine confidence in the Trump campaign, and ultimately, even when Trump was elected, to continue to have that effort go for literally almost the entire time of his term in office.
And as this continues to unfold, what is the remedy at this point? I mean, you know, the election's done, but what happens moving forward in the future to protect us from this kind of just absolute misinformation in the future?
Well, one of the first things is internal controls of our federal government. I had never, both as a former counterintelligence special agent and intelligence operative, I had never seen in my time taking outside information from sources which are clearly political and using it as official government information. That, first off, has to stop. What, by all accounts, happened is that Comey and folks brought in contractors. They brought in all these folks from the outside, quote-unquote, validate information. I've never heard of that. And I think we saw what happened. You do that. You bring in outside people. You bring in outside politics then. That's the first thing. Secondly, Rick, I think we all agree, accountability. Some of these folks knew right up front they were doing illegal things. They did them anyway. And I think the presumption was at the time in 2016 is that, oh, you know, if Hillary gets elected, she'll look the other way because we helped her. And that's very dangerous. And these things still exist today. You have a politicized FBI at the very senior level. Other government agencies, I see this too, not quite as prevalent, but it's still there. So you've got to do both. You've got to create internal controls to never allow it to happen again, and then go after those who did it because, you know, I don't think they would hesitate in doing it again if they had the chance.
So that's misinformation. Now let's turn to suppression of information. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's the Hunter Biden laptop story that the New York Post ran with, but was basically banned from social media as well as not carried by any other media. A story out in the Insider this week, Business Insider, now known as Insider. Headline on it, new emails reveal Hunter Biden asked for $2 million plus success fees to help unfreeze Libyan assets. Stacks of money fill the green portion of the Libyan flag with Hunter Biden and the flag of Libya behind him in a photograph. And there are emails that accompany this. And I guess the question is, you know, where does this one go? And I know that you were very much interested in that letter signed by the 50 quote-unquote intelligence officers, basically putting the laptop as a Russian hoax, right?
Look no further than the hall of failure to look at who signed that letter. And the American people have to not wonder at all why. We have had intelligence failure after intelligence failure after looking at that list. And it's Jim Clapper and John Brennan signed that list. They knew it was they were lying. Then it was all political. They signed away any right they have to advise anybody on intelligence by doing that. But let's go back to Hunter real quick. Rick, I've said from day one it was authentic. The current information just triples down on what needs to be done regarding accountability. There is some evidence, there's investigations now ongoing, but suffice to say that the federal government knew a long time ago, and they too, not only the media ignored this last year, Rick, the federal government ignored this. I've spoken with JP, the computer tech who took in Hunter's hard drives, there were three of them, he recovered one. I know the colonel, Ron Scott, who brought the information to the FBI initially, a full 6 months before the campaigns of Trump or Biden started. So this information has been in the federal government by people I know personally for a long time before everything started. So this is not some diffuse, obscure fact that people I don't personally know about. This happened. The federal government sat on it. And at this point, it's very clear that the Hunter Biden current situation must be resolved with an indictment. And of course, we got to resolve where did who's the big guy and where did 10% go when it went to the big guy.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, fascinating. And you've got the Thought to Action podcast. What's topic this week?
So we had Rebecca Koffler, who wrote a book called Putin's Playbook. She's a former DIA analyst, and she's not talking about the Russian collusion. She's talking about there's really a threat from Russia, and you got to figure out how to focus on that and step away from the collusion. So it's a good view. I think people enjoy it.
And you'll find that at londoncenter.org, the Threat to Action podcast. Tony, thank you very much.
Thank you.
KT McFarland coming up next. We're 7:46 on the Saturday Morning Update. Al BD's in the WML Traffic Center this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I'm looking in the traffic cameras. I'm not seeing any crashes, and there isn't any construction being set up yet. Inner Loop and Outer Loop are at the posted speed limit in Maryland. Also in Maryland, between the two beltways, on the BW Parkway and on 95, no delays on the northbound side or on the southbound side. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, it's clear eastbound and westbound between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. And finally, on 270 in Montgomery County between the Beltway and Frederick, you're at the posted speed limit northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A beautiful start to the weekend. We will see the clouds on the increase, though, through the afternoon as a weak cold front moves in from the north and west. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s. Dry conditions expected even with the cold front, just the added clouds. Later on tonight, low temperatures back into the 50s under mostly clear skies. For your Sunday, mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy at times. Winds out of the northwest, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some higher gusts. High temperatures tomorrow in the lower 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
54 degrees in D.C., 7:47 Saturday Morning Update. 7:50 Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by K.T. McFarland. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor, and she has authored Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., wonderful to have you with us this morning.
Always a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
You know the saying, you can't see the forest for the trees. Well, we've all been among the trees with the day-to-day stories from the border. But, KT, you were just in Texas. You were giving a speech there. And how about you give us the big picture on the Biden border strategy?
I was just in Austin and met with a number of people who had been to the border. And here's what I determined and what their conclusions were. It is the most cynical political abuse of power by the White House, frankly, their puppets in Congress, and their pet parrots in the media who are enabling everything, who refuse to call the Biden administration on anything. And here's why. The Biden administration, they're going to keep denying there's a problem. They know there's a problem. They caused the problem. They want the problem of an open border and millions of illegal immigrants into the United States. They don't care where they're from. It's not really a humanitarian issue in their mind. It's a political issue. And here's why they're letting them in. They're letting them in with a wink and a nod about the process of regularizing them all. They're shipping them to the red states. So they're taking hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. They're going to ship them. They are shipping them to the red states. And then they're going to give them amnesty and citizenship before the next election. There was something in the reconciliation bill that was declared by the Senate and House parliamentarians as illegal, but to try to give citizenship to at least 8 million people. And they're going to then give the bribes for these people to vote Democrat. They know, the Democrats in the White House, they know their message isn't working with the American people. They know it's only going to get worse, inflation, the economy, the woke agenda. And they know they're headed for a major trouncing in 2022 and 24. So if they can't convince the current Americans to keep them in office, they're going to create millions of new American voters who they're convinced will keep them in office. Why? Because they so cynically believe they own the Hispanic vote. They own the black vote. I mean, nobody owns anybody's vote in America except the voter himself. And I just find it the most cynical abuse of constitutional power that I've seen in my lifetime. These people care more about winning and staying in power than they do about the country.
And, of course, if any Republican state legislatures try to take any action on election integrity, they're accused of all kinds of things, and the media and the Democrats pile on. I want to turn to Afghanistan, because that one's slipping off the radar screen now. It's slipping off the evening newscasts and may show up 10 or 12 pages deep in a newspaper. Are they going to get away with this one?
Yeah, I think they are. And again, cynically, they bet rightly that once the cameras were off and the reporters were gone from Afghanistan in the last evacuation, that the story would fade from view, along with their responsibility for the fiasco. It would be gone in the voters' minds come election time. I do think they've gotten away with owning this fiasco because people move on in America. But they won't get away with the next fiasco because here's what's going to happen in the next 12 months. China and others are emboldened. China especially knows it needs to make its move before the next election cycles, 2022 and 24, when there could be a change of leadership in Congress or in the White House. So they've sized the Biden team up as weak, incompetent, feckless, and they've got to move fast, and their move will most likely be over Taiwan or control of the South China Sea. That's why in the last few weeks we've seen Chinese warships sail right up to the territorial waters of Hawaii and Alaska. They've brazened it out on the COVID origins investigations and they've conducted and currently are conducting military exercises designed to invade Taiwan. As an example to Taiwan of, if you don't do what we say, we're going to invade you and don't expect the Americans to help you out on anything. Look, Rick, I don't think history repeats itself, but I do think it rhymes. And after the botched Bay of Pigs invasion into Cuba, then-President Kennedy was seen by the Russians as weak, inexperienced, indecisive. And within a year, the Russians began sending nuclear missiles to Cuba and launching the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, at that point, President Kennedy stood up to them. The Russians backed down. But we came dangerously close to nuclear war. The other example I would give is fast forward to Reagan. The air traffic controllers early in the Reagan administration, they staged an illegal walkout strike, and they brought U.S. air traffic to a standstill, assuming that Reagan would fold and give them what they wanted rather than risk the shutdown of the American transportation system. Reagan didn't. He fired the air traffic controllers. He called Cap Weinberger, who was Secretary of Defense. I was in the Secretary's office at the time, and he asked Weinberger, can you get military air traffic controllers, put them in the civilian aircraft towers, and we can keep the planes flying, civilian aircraft flying. Well, we later found out after the fall of the Soviet Union that in declassified Russian documents that the Russian leaders looked at that event with Reagan, and they said, whoa, he's not just some nice-looking Hollywood actor. This guy's tough. And that's one of the reasons that as the U.S. then moved out in the Reagan administration to bankrupt the Soviet Union, to out-technology the Soviet Union, the Russian leadership knew Reagan was not a guy to blink, and he wasn't a guy to fold. And that's one of the reasons that contributed to our Cold War victory. The Biden team is now responsible for Afghanistan, and while we may have forgotten it, these are the same guys that brought us Benghazi in the Obama administration. They're going to screw up the next crisis, too. The Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, the North Koreans, they don't forget about what happened in Afghanistan. They know what they're going to face if they challenge the United States, which is nothing. I do think, however, the American people will hold these leaders responsible come election time. So, but I hope and pray.
We can all hope. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. You will find her opinion pieces at foxnews.com. As always, K.T., an honor for us to have you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. Talk to you next week.
You too. 7:58, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up next, it's Garden Sense following the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.